for the proof of that right, for the proof of that right, that for the proof that the right to a motion for new trial can be waived is shown by the following quotations and authorities. In Hall v. State, 110 Tennessee, 365, the court said, and I quote, in his words on general practice, Judge Elliott, Volume 2, Section 995, says, the right to move for a new trial may be waived by agreement in advance, or by inconsistent acts, or by neglecting to take the proper steps. Thus, it has been held moving in arrest of judgment before moving for a new trial is a waiver of the latter motion. And, quoting from another case, the practice in this state is well settled that a motion in arrest of judgment made before a motion for a new trial waives the latter motion. This last statement is quoted and cited in Palmer v. State, 121, Tennessee, page 489. Almost the identical quote is found in Green v. State, 147, Tennessee, 299. In Bradford v. State, Supra, where the defendant was not present when his motion for new trial came on to be heard, the Tennessee Supreme Court held, we are accordingly of the opinion that the defendant, by his own act, has waived the right to have his motion for a new trial considered and determined. His conduct was in legal effect an abandonment of the prosecution of his motion. We think, therefore, that the court did not commit error in ordering the dismissal of that motion, its judgment so ordering is affirmed. The Supreme Court of Missouri, in the state, case of State v. Pence, 428 Southwestern, 2nd, 503, 1968 opinion says, appellant cites no case in which it has been held that the waiver of the right to file a motion for a new trial is, as a matter of law, involuntary when the defendant is not specifically advised of the rights which he will be afforded on appeal. Maynes v. Swenson, 8th Circuit, 385 Federal 2nd, 943, does hold that the right to appeal must be knowingly and intelligently waived. However, the court there considered the issue as a factual one to be determined in the light of all of the circumstances. Since a defendant may waive his right to a motion for new trial and to an appeal, the next question is what constitutes a waiver? The most cited case appears to be Johnson v. Zerks, 304 U.S. 464, 58 Supreme Court, 1019. It says, it has been pointed out that courts indulge every reasonable presumption against waiver of fundamental constitutional rights and that we do not presume acquiescence in the loss of fundamental rights. A waiver is ordinarily an intentional relinquishment or abandonment of a known right or privilege. The determination of whether there has been an intelligent waiver or right of right to counsel must depend in each case upon the particular facts and circumstances surrounding that case, including the background, experience, and conduct of the accused. Part of this last quoted statement is cited in the case of McCarthy versus United States, which is 89 Supreme Court, 1166, 1969 opinion. A further discussion of waiver is found in State X. Rel. Lee versus Brown Supra on page 691. Waiver is concisely defined as the voluntary relinquishment of a known right. 27 Ruling Case Law, 904. Waiver is a doctrine of very broad and general application. It concedes a right but assumes a voluntary and understanding relinquishment of it. It is a voluntary act and implies an election to dispense with something of value or to forego something, some advantage which he might at his option have demanded and insisted upon. Whether or not the judgment in this case was properly entered on a plea of guilty must now be decided. In discussing the principle that a judgment properly entered on a plea of guilty cannot be reviewed by appeal or error proceedings, Wharton's Criminal Procedures, Section 2247, Volume 5, page 498, says, Before proceeding to make such a plea the foundation of a judgment, however, the court should see that it is made by a person of competent intelligence, freely and voluntarily, and with a full understanding of its nature and effect, and of all the facts on which it is founded. Judge Oliver in State X. Rel. Lawrence v. Henderson, 433 Southwestern 2nd, 96, 1968 opinion, certiorari denied by the Supreme Court of Tennessee on November 4, 1968, cited the law concerning the entering of a plea of guilty as follows, and I quote, "A guilty plea induced by promises or threats or other coercion is not voluntary and is a nullity, and a conviction based on such an involuntary plea is guilty of guilty is void." Macabroda v. United States, 368 U.S., 487, 82 Supreme Court Reporter, 510, 7 Lawyers Edition, 2nd, 437, citing other cases. In State X. Rel. Barnes v. Henderson, 220 Tennessee, 719, 423, Southwestern 2nd, 497, our Supreme Court recognized this universal rule. It is recognized in this state, as in all jurisdictions, that a plea of guilty must be made voluntarily and with full understanding of its consequences. And in Brooks v. State, 187 Tennessee 67, 213 Southwestern 2nd 7, the court said, out of just consideration for persons accused of crime, courts are careful that a plea of guilty shall not be accepted unless made voluntarily after proper advice with full understanding of its consequences, end quotation. The United States Supreme Court in McCarthy v. United States Supra said, consequently, if a defendant's guilty plea is not equally voluntary and knowing, it has been obtained in violation of due process, and it is therefore void, moreover, because a guilty plea is an admission of all the elements of a formal criminal charge. It cannot be truly voluntary unless the defendant possesses an understanding of the law in relation to the facts. It is well settled in Tennessee that a trial court speaks only through its minutes. McLean v. State Supra, Jackson v. Handel, 327 Southwestern 2nd 55, Howard v. State, 217 Tennessee 556. In the Howard case, the court said, the rule in this state for generations has been, and is, that minutes are indigenous to courts of record, and when they are signed by a judge, they become the highest evidence of what has been done in the court. So far as they are records of judicial proceedings, they import absolute verity and are conclusive unless attacked for fraud. The rule has been stated otherwise that a court of record is a court where acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled and in parchment for perpetual memorial and testimony. These rolls are called the record of the court, and they are of such high and transcendent authority that their truth is not to be questioned. Introduced in this case at this hearing by Mr. J. E. Blackwell, criminal court clerk of Shelby County, Tennessee, in his 17th year, are the following exhibits. Exhibit 1, which is an exhibit allowing attorneys Haynes, Jr., which is an exhibit of constituting the minute entry of the 12th of November, signed by Judge Battle, allowing attorneys Haynes, Jr. and Sr. to withdraw from the case, and allowing attorney Percy Foreman to substitute as counsel in this case. Motions for new trial, motions for continuance, rather, were granted and reset to the 3rd of March at that time. Exhibit 2, the petition for waiver of trial and acceptance of plea of guilty, signed by James Earl Ray and by his attorneys, was made Exhibit 2. Exhibit 3 was the minute entry made on the 10th of March and signed by Judge Battle, which was an order authorizing waiver of trial and acceptance of the guilty plea. Exhibit 4 was a part of a transcript in which Judge Battle questioned the defendant Ray. This was made Exhibit 4. Exhibit 5 was the minute book entry on March the 10th, 1969, which was the actual judgment and sentencing by Judge Battle. The order authorizing the waiver of trial and acceptance of plea of guilty and made Exhibit 3 in this case shows that Judge Battle heard statements made in open court by the defendant, his attorneys of record, the district attorney general, the assistant attorneys general, and that he questioned the defendant, as shown in by Exhibit 4, and his counsel in open court. This minute entry is on the court's minute for March 10, 1969, and was signed by Judge Battle. It further shows that the petition of the defendant James Earl Ray for waiver of trial and accepted trial jury by jury and request for acceptance of a plea of guilty, which was made Exhibit 2 to the testimony today at this hearing, was attached and incorporated in this order. This petition was signed by the defendant Ray and is witnessed and signed by his privately retained attorney, Percival Foreman, and his court-appointed attorneys, Hugh Stanton, Sr. and Jr. Judge Battle, as shown by the minute entries, Exhibit 3, using the evidence set out above, in this court's opinion, had ample evidence to find as he did in this exhibit, to wit. Judge Battle found, as shown in Exhibit number 3, it appearing, and I quote from that exhibit, it appearing to the court, after careful consideration, that the defendant herein has been fully advised and understands his right to a trial by jury on the merits of the indictment against him, and that the defendant herein does not elect to have a jury determine his guilt or innocence under a plea of not guilty, and has waived the formal reading of the indictment, and it further appearing to the court that the defendant intelligently and understandingly waives his right to a trial and of his own free will and choice, and without any threats or pressure of any kind or promises other than the recommendation of the state as to punishment, and does desire to enter a plea of guilty and accept the recommendation of the state as to punishment, waives his right to a motion for new trial and or appeal. It is therefore ordered, adjudged, and decreed that the petition filed herein be, and the same is hereby granted. That's end quote. At the time of the guilty plea, Judge Battle fully questioned.
The charges of proceedings of the defendant as to his understanding of the sentence being recommended to him, and whether the defendant had been convinced to plead guilty by any promise other than the agreed sentence. The defendant's answers left no doubt that he fully understood the circumstances surrounding this guilty plea, that he had fully discussed the waiver he had executed, that the waiver had been read to him or that he had read it himself and signed it. It is obvious that Judge Battle's finding complies with the law for acceptance of a guilty plea, as stated above in discussing a properly entered guilty plea in State X Rel Lawrence versus Henderson Super, McCarthy versus United States Super, and Barton's Criminal Procedure Section 2247, Volume 5, Page 498 Super. It is also obvious that Judge Battle's finding that the defendant intelligently and understandingly waived his right to a motion for new trial and an appeal complies cases are set out above in State v. Kent, Supra, Johnson v. Zerks, Supra, State X. Rel. Lee v. Brown, Supra, and McCarthy v. United States, Supra. It is therefore the opinion of this court that the guilty plea entered by the defendant James Earl Ray before Judge Battle was properly entered, that it was knowingly and intelligently and voluntarily entered, and that such guilty plea precluded the defendant from filing a motion for a new trial in this case. Further, this court finds that the defendant James Earl Ray knowingly and intelligently and voluntarily expressly waived any right he may have had to a motion for new trial and or appeal. Either one of these two decisions showing that the defendant could not file and have a motion for new trial heard renders Tennessee Code Annotated Section 17-117 inapplicable in this case. Consequently, this court, after a full evidentiary hearing on this hearing in this matter, finds that the state's motions to strike are well taken and should be granted, and that the defendant's motions, as amended, regardless of what he calls the motions, should be stricken and dismissed without further hearing. These motions cannot be treated as a motion for new trial, nor can they be treated as a petition for writ of habeas corpus or under the Post-Conviction Act, because the elements necessary for the latter two petitions are not present, and because he had already waived his motion for new trial, and this has been finally determined by Judge Battle in his minutes of the 10th of March. It is therefore ordered to judge and decree that the state of Tennessee's motion to strike are granted, and that the defendant's motion, as amended, are stricken and dismissed. It is further ordered, adjudged, and decreed that the writ of habeas corpus issued to return this defendant for hearing is hereby quashed, dismissed, and held for naught, and the defendant James Earl Ray is hereby ordered to be returned to the state penitentiary at Nashville, Tennessee, under the authority of the original judgment and orders of this court. All right, gentlemen, anything further in this matter?
Division 3 by interchange until full notice.